Good afternoon, and again, welcome to our visitors, longtime friends, having the opportunity to visit with us here at church. Do we have anyone going to Hawaii for the feast today here? Okay, I'll skip the announcement. This announcement by Dave Register for those going to Hawaii. I just wanted to pass that along if we had anyone going. As Mr. Diaz, I lose my voice very quickly, or not lose it, but it runs out of air very quickly, and I have to keep clearing my throat. This morning I was in Bakersfield, and leading songs was, I hadn't led songs since I had COVID. And so leading songs and waving the arms and the air just went away. So I had to be very careful in leading songs and sing a little bit quieter than normal. Well, as we approach the end of the age, we are likely going to be tested beyond anything that we've had to go through before. Some of us have had some very difficult tests this year already, or the past 2 years. But as we approach the end of the age and we know what is prophesied to happen, we know what is prophesied to take place, we are likely going to be tested even further than we probably can even imagine. We live in a rapidly changing society. We see the society changing around us. We see an economically changing society. And we see a rapidly collapsing moral society. Virtues and morals are changing very quickly in this world. But it's almost a guarantee that your faith and your trust in God are going to be tested. God tells us we're going to be tested. He says we're going to go through trials and difficulties. It's interesting how things play together sometimes, and out of all the thousands of verses that God inspired in Scripture, I want to turn to one that was given in our opening message. Luke chapter 18 and verse 1, because as I start this message, it ties in very clearly and very well with the message we heard in the sermonette. Luke chapter 18 and verse 1, it says, "He spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart." Do you pray for something regularly and not give up? Or as we heard this morning, persevere. I dare say so many people don't receive what they're asking for within a short period of time and either stop asking or think that, well, God's not listening, God's not going to answer this prayer, or God's not going to give me what I'm asking for. And that is a mistake. Said, "And God shall avenge his own elect, those who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them." Crying out day and night, asking on a repeated basis. William's translation says, "Will not God give justice and protection to those people who cry to him day and night, since he is so patient with them?" He's patient with us and he listens, but he wants us to come to him, as we heard, and ask. Albert Barnes says, "Though he bear long with them," this passage has been variously interpreted, and there are some variety of readings in the manuscript. Some read, "Will not God avenge his elect? Will he linger in their cause?" But the most natural meaning, although he defers long to avenge them, he greatly tries their patience, yet he will avenge them. He allows us to be tested. He allows us to be tried. He goes on, he says, "He tries their faith. He suffers their persecutions and trials to continue, sometimes a long time. And it almost appears as if he would not interpose, yet he will do it, and he will save them." Again, as was mentioned already, God wants us to continue to persistently come to him, and he will answer the prayer. He says, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth?" Will Christ find faith on the earth? We can make it more personal and say, will you be watching? And will you be continuing in faith? Still crying out, knowing that God is going to answer. Now, there are certain things that God promises, and he says he's going to return. He says certain things are going to take place in the world. and we can trust that those things are going to take place. So we have the ability to know, and we have the ability to understand that He will answer the prayer. But we have to continue to cry out. As was mentioned, verses 2 through 6 talk about the woman who continually persisted to ask for something, and eventually she was given what she was asking. How much more will we, before God, come before a just and loving God to respond to our requests? And you say, well, why would He respond to us any more than anyone else? Because He has called us to a relationship with Him. He's opened up the opportunity for us to call Him Father, or Abba Father, in a relationship that the world just doesn't experience. We have to understand that God doesn't delay His answer because He doesn't care. And sometimes in asking, people get this frustration, I've been asking and asking and God is not giving me what I'm asking for. And so maybe He doesn't care. Maybe He's not listening. Yet it is in those delays that we have to learn patience, persistence, and we have to grow in faith. God says, I will answer you. I'm going to allow you to be tested, but I will answer. So you have to know that God hears our prayers and that God wants to answer. That's a special kind of faith. To pray for something, to ask God for something, and know that He is going to answer. One way or the other, at what point or the other, He's going to answer. And it's a special kind of faith and a relationship that we have. And it's not just a faith or a belief in something, it is a relationship. Special kind of relationship. We may not understand at the time why He's not answering immediately, but God says He will answer. So we have to continue to go to Him in prayer and supplication. We have to continue to ask. Now, Daniel's a wonderful example of doing this and asking for something and praying for something and yet waiting. Let's turn to Daniel chapter 10. Daniel chapter 10 and verse 12. Says, then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and you humbled yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. He says, from the first day. Now, we're going to find out how long he actually waited and how many days he continued to pray for something. But God says, from the first day that you set your heart to understand, you humbled yourself and you ask me, your words were heard. Daniel had been asking without an answer, and God was listening the entire time. Who is it that usually gives up when we are asking for something? We ask, we ask, we ask, and we go, okay, I'm not going to ask anymore. It's us. Daniel 10:13, it says, but the prince of the king of Persia withstood me 21 days. And then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the king of Persia. 21 days, 3 weeks, Daniel prayed and asked for something. And yet God says, I heard you from day one. You say, well, that's kind of cruel. Why didn't he answer in day one? Because he was testing Daniel. God told him that he had been heard from day one. So the first lesson we can understand in looking at this particular subject today is keep praying and be persistent. Or as the first message, persevere. Be persistent. Keep coming to God over and over and over. And now that could be about personal things that are going on in our lives. It could be about, especially as we see things changing around us, praying for God's kingdom to be established on the earth. Praying for the protection of God's people around the world. But we have to continue to keep coming to God. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes or how God's going to work something out, yet we should keep asking. And we should have that faith that God says, I will answer. God will always have our best interest at heart. In the time remaining, I want to go through and look at some examples of faith that God clearly lays out for us. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, Hebrews 11 is known as the faith chapter. We see 10 individuals that are introduced by the phrase, by faith. And I want to look at these lessons that we can gain from these 10 individuals. And although we see these examples, many examples in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. This phrase, by faith, and then giving a story, is not used until Hebrews chapter 11. These 10 individuals give, by their example, what it means to live by faith. All right, let's begin in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4 says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, though which he obtained witness that he was righteous. And God testifying of these gifts, and through it, being dead, he still speaks. The example still continues on. The attitude and character of Cain and Abel and the sacrifices that they made came out in their offerings to God. Cain's offering showed an ongoing problem. It showed an issue with character. It tells us that Abel had a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Now, we can look at that and say, well, does more excellent mean, well, it's not that Cain's sacrifice wasn't excellent, it was just Abel's was more excellent. Some look at it in that particular way. Was it still acceptable? Just like we learned when we started out today, we have to go to God regularly and persistently. We cannot go to God half-hearted. And we see through the story, if you read the story of Cain and Abel, you read through that story that he was half-hearted. He wasn't doing things with his whole heart and serving God in that way. And just as with Cain, it starts to cause blind spots where we can't see ourselves. And he began to think differently, and his thinking began to change. Said the Lord in Genesis 4, verses 3 through 5, the Lord respected Cain and his offering, but he did not respect Cain. He respected Abel and his offering, but did not respect Cain and his offering. Cain's overall attitude was displayed in a very disrespectful tone towards God. We see in verse 9 when Cain cries out to God, am I my brother's keeper? He said, why are you asking me? You should know these things. Am I in charge of my brother? Don't make me responsible. And it was a very disrespectful tone that Cain had towards God after the fact. Compare that to Abel, and Abel believed that God would abundantly bless him above and beyond his quality offering. He had an offering that was highly acceptable or a more excellent sacrifice. So in comparing that to Abel, the lesson that we can gain from this particular by faith is always give our best to God. Always give our best. You can't be half-hearted. You can't ride the fence. Always give our best to God. In verse 5, we see next Enoch. Says, by faith, Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death. Before he was taken, he had this testimony that pleased God. So it says, by faith, Enoch was taken away. Now, some look at that and say, oh, he was taken away, he did not see death. He went to heaven and he's living eternally in heaven. We used to have a booklet, Where is Enoch? That's a good subject to study on your own. But what follows this particular description of by faith Enoch is one of my favorite verses. Verse 6 says, without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Did Paul insert this general comment here just arbitrarily? Did he just throw it in and say, oh, by the way, since we're talking about faith, without faith, you can't please God, and you have to diligently seek him? Or is it tied in with what was going on in the life of Enoch? Consider Genesis chapter 5. Let's keep our place here. We'll go back and look at Genesis chapter 5 and verse 21. Genesis chapter 5 and verse 21. Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. So, if you didn't know the correlation between Enoch and Methuselah. After he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years. All the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. The specific duration of Enoch's walk with God, it tells us, is 300 years. And it's noteworthy because it's a time span that, for the most part, is omitted everywhere else in Genesis 5. We only find this one thing. Enoch walked with God 300 years. Consequently, long-term diligence was distinguishing character of Enoch. Many of us have been in the church 50 years. Six times that, Enoch continued to have a relationship and walk with God. That is long-term diligence. He believed that God is who he is. He understood a relationship with God, and he diligently followed him for 300 years. Some of you, again, like myself, have been in the church over 50 years, and 50 years seems like a long walk, a hard struggle. But 300 years, he continued to follow God and to seek him diligently. Are we still seeking God diligently like we began? The lesson here is it takes faith to diligently walk with God on a continual basis. It takes faith to diligently walk with God. And Enoch displayed that, and it says, by faith, he went through this process. Next, Hebrews chapter 11, we'll go back to Hebrews. We see Noah. Hebrews 11, verse 7 says, by faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear and prepared an ark for the saving of his household. So he was, by faith, Noah, divinely warned of things not yet seen. He had faith. God said, it's going to flood and you're going to need a big ship. You're going to need an ark. He moved with godly fear. So he built an ark for an event, flooding, that had never occurred in human history. This is going to be a global flood. It's going to cover the entire earth. And again, you probably heard the Bill Cosby, right, that's going to happen. Well, in a place that flooding was not common, it was a matter of moving with godly fear and believing. There's something else to consider here, and this actually came up as a question at the teen camp this year in our Q&A. And again, it's possible that a second event and a second miracle occurred here as well. We'll keep our place here in Hebrews. Let's go to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4. Genesis chapter 2. We know many miracles were performed, and we see the examples of those, but Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4 gives us a history of the heavens and earth when they were created and how things operated. These are the generations of the heavens and earth when they were created in the day that the Lord made the earth and the heavens. Genesis 2 and verse 5, it says, every plant of the field before it was in the earth and every herb of the field before it grew, the Lord had not caused it to rain upon the earth. And there was not a man to till the ground. So Genesis 2:5 said it had not rained on the earth. Verse 6, but there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. Now, we have our sprinkler systems in California, and they pop up and they come on when we have them set on a timer. But even that is not quite a mist that just comes up from the ground naturally. So we find it interesting for the first time rain is mentioned is in the flood. Something to consider, did it ever rain before the flood for Noah? Doesn't tell us anywhere in between that it began to rain or God changed the system. He just said a mist would come up from the ground and water the earth. But God warned there's going to be a flood, and Noah probably understood, well, it's probably going to take a lot more than just a little mist coming up. That would take a long time to flood the entire earth. And of course it did. The earth burst open and floods came from the ground. It came from the sky. But it had never rained, according to theologians who have studied Scripture. They said it's very possible it had never rained until Noah. But in verse 1, it tells us that, going back to Hebrews 11, verse 1, it tells us that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So we read of Noah that he was moved and to acted in a godly way of things that he didn't perceive or was able to see yet. And so either way, Noah prepared an ark, and he prepared it by faith for the saving of his family, but he trusted in what God said, that it was going to flood the entire earth. And so Noah's diligence distinguished him from the rest of the world, literally. His diligence to continue moving forward in the face of mockery, to be challenged by other individuals, people who may have said, it's never rained on the earth. It doesn't do that. We have a mist that comes up. It's never going to rain that hard. Genesis 7 verse 1 says, I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. He considered Noah to be righteous, that Noah had a relationship with God and was following him. The New Revised Standard Version says, you alone are righteous before me in this generation. The Good News Bible says, you are the only one in the world who does what is right. The lesson we can gain from Noah is when following God's word, don't be afraid to be different from everyone else. Very similar to what we talked about at summer camp this year. To be a light and to stand out, you have to be different. You have to live God's way of life, and that's automatically going to make you different than most people. And we can't be afraid to be different. God says, don't be embarrassed of me, or I will be embarrassed of you. So when following God's word, don't be afraid to be different from everyone else. And Noah was quite different. Building an ark in a place that had never flooded and telling people there's a rain coming that is going to flood the entire earth. Again, lessons to be learned from each one of these individuals. But it tells us that here's their story, and it was by faith. Next, we see Abraham, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called out of a place which he would receive as an inheritance, he went out not knowing where he was going. I love the phrase where he tells Abraham, I want you to go here, and it says Abraham went. It doesn't say Abraham thought about it for a long time and then finally made a decision. It says Abraham went. So by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a particular place. So Abraham packed up and left. There was no arguments, no complaints, no considerations. It says, not knowing where he was going, and he was 75 years old. He eventually settled near Bethel and built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. It says he built an altar as a symbol of respect and honor, and called on the name of God, continued to have that relationship with God. But we see what happens next in Genesis 12 and verse 10. It says, there was a famine in the land, and Abraham had to go down to Egypt to dwell there. Now, surely God knew that there was going to be a famine in the land. Abraham could have said, well, why didn't you wait until after the famine and then tell me to go to this new land? You know, you knew of the famine. Why didn't you just wait till after the famine was gone? Well, then he, in Exodus chapter 13, talks about building of the altar, that he made this altar in Bethel. It says, the building of an altar was like a seed of faith that continued to bear fruit upon to the place which the altar which he had made there first. So that altar was like a seed of faith. It was a recognition that God had fulfilled what he said he would. God told him to get up and move and to go. He did. And he built an altar to God. And again, it was a representative of his faith. Do you ever wonder what God is doing in your life and question, why are you leading me through this? What is it that I'm supposed to learn from this? Or if he's done a work in you, and sometimes we feel like, well, I feel like God was using me, but I feel like that time is gone now, or it's just not quite the same. We have to keep following God. No matter how old we are, some people say, well, I'm older, so let's give other people the responsibilities, and I just want to sit back and wait. We have to keep following God, no matter how old we are or where we are in life. The lesson from Abraham here is do all things without complaining and disputing. And you can find a reference passage to that in Philippians 2, verse 14. Do all things without complaining and disputing. So it says, by faith, Abraham obeyed. He didn't complain. He didn't dispute. Didn't question. He did all things without complaining and disputing. So Abraham, the father of the faithful, was introduced by name with a second by faith statement. This shouldn't be surprising because God calls Abraham the father of the faithful. But Hebrews 11, verse 17, we see again, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who was he who had received the promise, offered him up only his begotten son, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. Now, talk about having your faith tested. God promised, I'm going to give you a son, I'm going to give you a child, and through him these blessings are going to come, and then now I want you to take him up on this mountaintop and offer him as an offering. But it says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, when God was wanting to know where his faith was, he offered up Isaac. He was ready. He had the knife drawn. And yet through those promises, Abraham knew that God could resurrect Isaac and would resurrect Isaac. He believed him enough that God said, the promises are going to come through your son Isaac. And so when he was asked to offer him as a sacrifice, he knew God is obviously going to resurrect him because I believe that promise. Once again, there's no record of complaining or dragging his feet. But when he was tested, he did what he was asked to do. All he knew is that God had promised that he was going to continue to provide this blessing of the nations through Isaac. So therefore, God was going to keep his promise, even if he had to resurrect Isaac, and Abraham knew that. So the lesson is, it is impossible for God to lie. God says, I'm going to bless you through your son Isaac, and it is impossible for God to lie. We find that in Hebrews 6, verse 18, and also in Numbers 23, 19, where it says, God is not a man that he should lie. God is not going to tell him one thing and then perform something differently. I'm going to bless you through Isaac. Now I want you to sacrifice Isaac and then come up with a different way of blessing. No, he didn't lie. And Abraham understood, because of his relationship with God, that God was going to give him that particular blessing, even if it meant the resurrection of Isaac. Now we see a woman, Sarah, and it kind of goes through the family history and family here. But Hebrews 11 and verse 11, it says, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a man-child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Now we could read that one verse right there and say, well, by faith, she just automatically believed God and trusted that he was going to provide a seed even in her old age. But it took a while before she judged him faithful who had promised. Initially, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, I've grown old. Shall I have pleasure and my Lord being old also? My husband's old, I'm old. And it says she laughed within herself, going, yeah, I'm going to have a child. So the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, surely I shall bear a child since I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? That statement that he made to Abraham is a statement to us as well. Is anything too hard for God? And the answer is absolutely not. In fairness to Sarah, Abraham's earlier reaction was an open display. Here it says Sarah laughed within herself, saying, shall I bear a child? But with Abraham, it says in Genesis 17, Abraham fell on his face and laughed. He laughed openly. He fell on his face and he's like, yeah, I'm old, my wife's old, and we're going to have a child, and there's going to be a blessing through our child. So as for Sarah, God heard her inward and secret laughter. We can't think, well, God only hears what we vocalize or only hears what we say in prayer. God knows our thoughts, and he knows the inward intents of the heart. And here he says he understood her inward laughter. He heard it. He listens to our hearts, and he's going to judge the secrets of our hearts. We find that in Psalm 44, verse 21. Nevertheless, we see that Sarah is in the faith chapter, and ultimately for being faithful, that she finally came to the point of having the faith like Abraham did that says, I trust God that he's going to fulfill what he's commissioned or what he has said. So God focuses on the end results. And if we continually seek God, if we go to God repeatedly, we go to God in diligence, then God will sometimes even forget our failures, like he did with Sarah, laughing within herself, thinking, well, it's impossible. How am I going to have a child when I'm old? The lesson we can learn from this is the things which are impossible with men are possible with God. And hopefully that is a lesson that's from Luke 18, verse 27. But hopefully you understand that very principle. The things which are impossible with men are possible with God. All things are possible through God. This has played out in my life multiple times where you think, well, there's no way that this is going to work out. I don't see how this can work out in any other way except this. And then God provides a way. God provides an answer and performs things and can perform things in you, through you, and for you that you never thought possible. Next we see Isaac. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 20. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Now we know that there was a deception and the goat's hair and all the different things that took place. But Isaac is in the faith chapter for something that he did. And he gave the birthright blessing to Jacob instead of the firstborn Esau, who ended up selling his birthright. But notice Isaac's faith also included both of his sons. When Isaac's faith passed along to his sons, it says, concerning the things to come, and again, Isaac still blessed Esau. He said, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. It wasn't that he chose one and didn't bless the other. But God didn't hold Isaac accountable for what Isaac didn't know. He had lost his sight. He thought he was blessing the right individual. And it was the right outcome, but the wrong methodology. Nevertheless, God judges according to the knowledge that's available to us. Isaac did what was right. He followed through with giving a blessing that was supposed to be given, and according to his ability, and he did it by faith. And he is listed there, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. The lesson is, whatever is not of faith is sin. It doesn't tell us that he sinned because he blessed the wrong individual. He blessed them according to what he thought was he was doing and what he thought he was doing right. Whatever is not of faith is of sin. That's Romans chapter 14, verse 23. That if it's not of faith, it's sin. But yet we're reading, by faith, Isaac blessed them, even though it was not quite done properly. God still blessed him for what he was doing because of his faith. Next we see Jacob, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of his sons, Joseph, each of the sons of Joseph, and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. Jacob faithfully crossed his hands for the particular blessings, and God obviously had told him to do this. He believed that God would fulfill his will in the not-so-distant future. It says, he shall also become a great people, and he shall also be great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. Jacob is in the faith chapter for being faithfully obedient. He was told to bless his children, told to bless the children of Israel, and like Jacob leaning on his staff, we have to rely on God to directly intervene in our lives, to direct us by faith. So the lesson from Jacob, and by faith what Jacob did, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding. He could have said, no, here's how I'm going to bless. This is how tradition is. I'm not going to veer from tradition. I'm going to do it my own way. No, the lesson, as Proverbs 3, verse 5 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean to your own understanding. That's part of being or living by faith, is not leaning to our own understanding. So many people say, well, my faith is telling me this, or I have faith because I believe this particular thing. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. We see that through the examples of Abraham and others that they believed intently that God was going to fulfill what he said he was going to do. Now we see Joseph, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Now, you may sometimes read scripture and just pass over certain things, but it says, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel. It's interesting that it is phrased that way. This was over 200 years before the Exodus. And Joseph was saying, here's what I want you to do with my bones when you depart. It took faith for Joseph to have the children of Israel take an oath to do this, and perhaps it was extra security against the potential of a lack of faith among the Israelites to either worship his bones or to make them of something that they shouldn't have been. But this official oath is more likely to be passed on through generations if it's an oath that they took. Let's keep our place here in Hebrews again. We'll turn back to Genesis chapter 50. Genesis chapter 50 and verse 24. Said, then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. Meaning, they're not going to continue to stay in Egypt. And so Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Later, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. We find that in Exodus 13:19. And for he had placed the children of Israel under a solemn oath that said, when you leave, you take my bones with you. So Joseph had no doubt about God's promise to deliver them from Egypt because this was 200 years earlier. And he said, when you are delivered, take my bones. He had faith in what God was going to do, and he undoubtedly knew that the children of Israel would be delivered. The lesson for this particular by faith is, so shall my word be that goes out from my mouth, it shall not return to me void. Isaiah 55 verse 11. God says when he says something, it is not going to come back to him void, or it's possible it might happen, possible it might not. When God states something and says something is going to happen, or it's going to be a certain way, or that it's to be done a certain way, that is exactly what God expects. And it will come back to him in fulfilling what he said. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24. Hebrews 11 verse 24 says, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. It's interesting that particular thing with Moses is chosen. That by faith, when he became of age, he refused to be called son of Pharaoh's daughter. There's a lot of things that Moses did by faith. He did a lot of things by faith. For example, he forsook Egypt. He trusted God to part the Red Sea. He kept the Passover. Yet the detail to refuse to be called Pharaoh's daughter, those things aren't recorded in Exodus, but they are recorded in Hebrews of things that he did by faith. According to Josephus, some Egyptians feared an alleged omen of the outcome since Moses' childhood. Since he was a child, they thought this is not good, and they looked at it as an omen. From the Antiquities book, chapter 7, Thermuthis, therefore, perceived him to be such a remarkable child, adopted him for her son, having no child of her own. And when one time she had to carry Moses to her father, and she put the infant into her father's hands. And he took him and hugged him close to his breast, and on the daughter's account, in a pleasant way, he put a diadem upon his head. But Moses threw it to the ground, and in a peril mood, he wreathed it round and tread upon it with his feet. Now, this is from the Book of Antiquities through Josephus, but it's saying even at a young age, Moses said, I don't want to receive this crown. I don't want what you're offering me, which is interesting. But Moses' path evidently came from the fruition of his defense of the Israelite slave. when it came to the point of defending an Israelite slave, it says, when he was 40 years old, and again, it's an excellent reminder of God's calling his people, working with individuals, and Moses saw that. So the lesson for Moses is, he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Matthew chapter 10, verse 37. We can't love our parents or our children more than our relationship with God. And so it says, by faith, when he became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He said, no, that's not who I am. I'm not going to be called that. Even though it could have given him physically, basically a kingdom or the running of a kingdom, he refused. And again, we have to understand, he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. Next, we see the faith of Rahab. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 31. This is very interesting because this is an individual who was not part of the Israelites, but yet she's recorded in the book of faith. Hebrews 11:31, it says, by faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. So by faith she did not perish. That tells us that she is recorded in this book of Hebrews, and as an example of faith, she did not perish. Rahab had protected the spies, but she did according to her belief and her understanding. And it didn't just start with the spies. Joshua chapter 2, verse 10 tells us, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt. Rahab had already heard stories, and it wasn't to her just a story. She believed it. And so when she was told that she is to protect these individuals and protect the spies, she already said, I've already heard stories of what your God can do, and I believe. And so it says, by faith, she did not perish. So God's miraculous power was recognized even by some pagans, because they understood there's stories coming from all different places about the same events and same things that took place. And again, some scholars today don't even believe the stories and the information that is given to us of what took place. But individuals there did, and they understood, and Rahab was one of them. She did something else by faith. She diligently followed the instructions when she was told, bind this line of thread and cord in the window through which you let us down, and then bring the rest of your family inside your house. So she and her family were protected, and she did what she was told, almost like you go back to Abraham, where it says Abraham was told this, and he obeyed. Well, she also, by faith, diligently followed those instructions. And so by faith, she did not perish with those who did not believe. The lesson is, faith without works is dead. We find that in James chapter 2, 20 and verse 26 as well. Faith without works is dead. She didn't have faith. She didn't say, I believe, but I'm not going to get involved. No, she said, I believe and I understand the stories which were given to me, and I understand what took place in the past. I understand who your God is, and I will follow through and do exactly what you're asking. Faith without works is dead. The above lessons that we went through only scratched the surface of what we could learn from the examples given to us. I want to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11. Now, this isn't giving us a story of faith, but it is telling us, now all these things happened to them as examples. It says, the lessons and the things that the children of Israel went through happened as examples. They were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the age have come. I think we can safely say we're coming to the end of the age. And so they're written for our admonition. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. You can't say, well, I've got all the faith I need. I'm ready for the end of the age. We can't think, well, my faith is complete. It's genuine. I've got everything I need. If we don't have the qualities of these individuals listed here, who God says very clearly, by faith, here's the example that they gave. and it was recorded in the faith chapter. Now, we didn't cover all of those who are listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Let's go to Hebrews 11 one last time. In verse 32. Hebrews 11 verse 32. It says, "What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets." He said, there's so many other stories and other things that I could tell you of individuals who displayed faith. Verse 33, it says, "Who through faith they subdued kingdoms, they worked righteousness, obtained promises, and they stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched the violence of fire. They escaped the edge of the sword. Out of weakness they were made strong, and they became valiant in battle. They turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again." We see that in the story of Elijah. "Others were tortured and not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trials of mockings and scourging, yes, of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. They were tempted, they were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute and afflicted and tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth." He said there are so many other stories and other things that you can read about by faith, how individuals lived their lives and what they did in showing an example to us. We need to think about these things. We need to think about the idea that here in the book of Hebrews, these stories are listed, and he said, time would fail me to tell, but are stories going to be told later? Could your name be put in there? Have you lived your life by faith? And is your faith where it needs to be as we approach the end of the age? We know we're going to be tested. We know we're going to be tried. And yet God says, these individuals by faith showed that they qualified, that they had made it. In fact, in verse 39, it says, "All of these, having obtained a good testimony through their faith, did not receive the promises." And we can think, well, that's not fair. They earned it. And they did. They earned through their faith, and they qualified. But God has a plan that's not finished yet. In verse 40, it says, "God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us." He said, yes, they qualified. And by faith, these individuals were examples, and they showed by the way they lived their lives and by the way they showed their faith that they were going to follow God completely and that there was a relationship there that was not going to be diffused. Modern King James Version says, "God provided something better, some better thing for us, that they should not be made perfect without us." He said, I'm not going to give them their gift and reward them, and then later you're going to be rewarded. He said, no, I want it to be a reward that is given to all of those who remain faithful throughout time. The word perfect means complete. So he said, they shall not be made complete, not be given all of the promises that had been given to them, without us. They were not to be made complete without us. And that should be something that's exciting to you and I, that we are going to receive the promises at the same time that these individuals are mentioned here by faith. There's one other passage that uses this phrase by faith. Let's go back to Hebrews chapter 10. It's not a passage about a particular individual, but Hebrews 10 and verse 35, he said, "Therefore do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward." He said, don't cast away that conviction and the commitment and the understanding that you trust in God completely, because it has a great reward. "For you have need of endurance." You have need of perseverance. You have need of persistence. "So that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Yet for a little while, he who is coming will come and will not tarry. the promise that we have of the return of Jesus Christ, and hopefully that's something we're praying for on a regular basis. We better understand it is going to happen. It's not just a pipe dream. It's not just, well, it's not going to happen in my lifetime or probably not going to. He said he is coming and he will come. It says verse 38, now the just shall live by faith. It says those who are justified, those who are going to be considered righteous will live by faith. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. If you begin to doubt, if you begin to ride the fence halfway. Verse 39, but we are not of those who draw back into perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. He said, we are not of those who are going to back off. We're there because we believe, and it's going to be to the point of being given eternal life. The source of this particular passage here that's being quoted is from Habakkuk 2:4. And it's quoted three times in the New Testament and adds a key word in where it's quoted. The just shall live by his faith. Meaning, you can't trust on the faith of someone else, and you can't just ride on the skirt tails of other church members or say, well, I'm still in the church. The just shall live by his faith. The pronoun his underscores a personal responsibility. You can't live by somebody else's faith. That's why we see the example of Abraham and Sarah. You can't live by the faith of your spouse. You can't live by the faith of a family member. It says by each one has a personal responsibility to live his own faith, not one of parents, family, friends, church members, church, or anyone else. You have to live by your faith. If things are added to this particular chapter in Hebrews chapter 11 of things that are going to take place, what will be said of you? What is it that God would say of you if he started off with by faith and then your name was put in there? Like these 10 individuals we have looked at today, God remembers each one of us. And we can't think, well, I'm just insignificant in the church, or God really doesn't know who I am. God knows us individually. He knows us by name. He knows us according to the examples that we have set and what we have done. I want to read from the book of Revelation. I'm not going to turn to these, but I am going to read through them. And it shows us that God knows each of us individually, and he knows what we've done. Revelation chapter 2 and verse 2 says, I know your works, your labor, and your patience. God says, I know what you've done. I know what your actions are. I know what your labor is, and I know what your patience is. That you cannot bear those who are evil and have tested those who say they are apostles and have not, and you found them to be liars. And you have persevered and have had patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary. And God says, I know this about you. Revelation 2:9 says, I know your works, your tribulation and your poverty. Again, going to God in prayer and consistently asking for direction or asking for help, God says, I know what your tribulations are. I know what difficulties you're going through. But he wants us to come to him, and he wants us to have that relationship where we discuss it with him. He said, I know your works, your tribulation, your poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but they're of the synagogue of Satan. Revelation 2, verse 13, I know your works and where you dwell and where Satan's throne is. And you hold fast to my name and you did not deny my faith. He said, I know what your works are. And again, these are to the churches of Revelation, but we also know that it was an overall message to every single individual within those churches. And it's a message to us. He said, even in the days which Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was killed among you where Satan dwells. Revelation 2:19, I know your works, your love, your service, your faith, and your patience. God knows when we serve, when we help other individuals. He said, I know and I see these things. Is that going to be something that is written about you, that by faith you lived your life in a particular way, that God will mention you by name? He said, as for your works, the last are more than the first. Revelation 3:8 says, I know your works, and see that I have set before you an open door that no man can shut, and you have a little strength, and you have kept my word. You have not denied my name. Indeed, I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan, who say they are Jews but are not, and they lie. Indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet, and to know that I have loved you. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I will also keep you from the hour of trial which has come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Here, even in telling us, I know your works and I know you, I know what your character is, he said, because you have kept my command to persevere, I will keep you from that hour of trial that shall come upon the whole earth. It's a promise, but it's also something, just as we've been reading in the book of Hebrews, that God says, when I state something, I do not lie. So if we continue to keep his commands and persevere, God says, I will protect you from that hour of trial that's going to come on the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold fast to what you have, that no man take your crown. Don't let another individual take away your faith. I want to end with one that we don't want to hear. In Revelation 3, verse 15, he says, I know your works, that you are neither hot nor cold. He said, I wish that you were hot or cold. So then, because you're lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will vomit you out of my mouth. He said, I know your works. And he said, you're lukewarm. That's not something that we want said of us. There's a lot of positive, I know your works. But at the end of the age, our works should not be that we're neither hot nor cold. We cannot let our guard down at any time. God says you have to be diligent and you have to be committed to the very end. You cannot be lukewarm in faith. Those who live by faith are going to be rewarded openly. And God says, I'm holding off on giving them their reward, because I want to give you the reward at the same time, that you should all be made complete together. Will you and I be part of those who are considered the faithful? Let's live our lives in such a manner that our names will also be preceded by the words, by faith.